Finding this podcast magical? Why not toss a coin to your Witches and a Druid podcast through the Acast supporter feature? It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to show your support now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Three Witches and a Druid Podcast, a Canadian podcast about paganism in today's modern society.
This is going to ruin it for a lot of people that love St. Patrick's Day. First of all, it has nothing to do with Irish pride. That's how it was shown later. There's nothing to do with leprechauns or Irish pride. Has nothing to do with that.
You just killed two great fantasies.
I know.
Right there.
Really, if you look into what that was, is that St. Patrick, right, the St. Patrick, was a Roman. His father was a Roman official, and he was tasked, just like the Roman Empire did with cleansing, destroying the Gnostic people who originally were the Egyptians and burning the Library of Alexandria. He was tasked with going to Ireland and the UK and Scotland area, but we specifically think of it as Ireland, because that was the core of this,
right,
where they went there and they were supposed to eradicate the last group on the planet that was still studying was that ancient old religion who were known as the serpents. So if you look at the story of St. Patrick, he was ridding the serpents, the snakes, right? The snakes from Ireland. But if you look all throughout geologic history of that region, there's never been snakes that lived there. It's a metaphor.
Huh.
It's a metaphor for the Druid people and pagans as a more general term, anyone who didn't follow this monotheistic Christian religion. And they were seen as a threat because they were the last group that had the ancient knowledge, and they were greatly demonized later. So what happened was you're celebrating the representation of the genocide and cleansing of the last serpent group on the planet, the Druids.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Three Witches and a Druid, where we sit around talking about how we live our lives and how we think our thoughts as modern pagans. I'm Margot.
And I'm Maeve.
Gwen.
And I'm Brian. So this episode, we're going to discuss drugs and alcohol in ritual or in sacred practice. I'm not going to be much help because I've never done any drugs ever. I'm very boring. I drink a lot of alcohol, though, I guess. but we don't really get drunk in ritual, so we have a little sip of mead, and that's really about it. But yeah, this is mostly going to be you three.
And your
you
sip
three
of
luscious.
Mead?
Well,
your sip of mead, is that the end of the ritual?
Usually about three quarters.
Yeah.
Yeah, we like bless a cup. It's usually full of mead or apple juice for the kids.
I have passed around the horn of mead in one of your rituals.
Oh, yeah. It's good.
Yeah. A mouth full of mead.
Oh, pre-COVID. When we passed around
and all drank out of the same vessel.
Well, alcohol killed any of the germs, right? Alcohol kills the germs.
Especially if it's like homemade mead. That's killing everything.
The germs.
And falls
the
in air.
Brain cells.
Sorry. Sad. But yeah, so drugs, alcohol, and ritual or sacred practice. Ba-ba-bum.
So there's two different ways we can go, right? As an entheogen, as a way to meet divinity. That's what you mean as a sacred practice.
Yeah.
So within ritual or within, you know, experiencing drugs and incorporating it as part of a...
We should clarify. We are drinking while doing this episode.
Yes.
So it's not like
we're stumbling.
Yeah, we're not
uptight
about this topic in any way.
No, we are not.
And I believe some of us have more experience than others as everybody looks at each other.
Yeah. And everybody's thinking, who's going to be listening to this?
Oh, well.
You know, it's your CMP tap, tap, tap on.
Yes.
the thing is, I'll start with the drug side. that there are perhaps a time and a place in a particular ritual that involves a psychedelic of some sort as part of the spiritual journey. If I was wherever you do it, I would do a peyote ceremony under the correct supervision with, you know what I mean, and all of that. I would love to try that. I do see how some people maybe if they wish to do certain meditations or they wish to do certain exploration, if that is something you want to do. I do not hold with showing up drunk or stoned to a public ritual or to a ritual with your coven or your friends where this is not the focus. I do not.
It's very different.
If I was putting on a public ritual and I knew someone was drunk, I'm terribly sorry.
That's a different thing. You don't need to pre-drink to go to a ritual.
Now, I do know oftentimes maybe a small glass of wine before a ritual. Maybe you've come from work or this. Maybe you're sitting around. Maybe you have a little snack. Maybe you have half a glass, or just a small glass of wine. You're unwinding and then you have your ritual. You're not drunk.
No.
You know, you're just maybe a little looser. And if everybody in your group agrees that that's okay, then that's okay. Some people will say, no, there's no drinking whatsoever before ritual. Well, if that's what your group has agreed upon, then you don't drink.
Yeah, it's very much a consensual
thing.
So it needs to be discussed beforehand. Obviously, the difference between being intoxicated and having a drink is a huge difference.
I have actually been in a psychedelic circle, and it was meant to be a psychedelic circle.
Yes, and that's a different
thing. That's a whole different
kettle. But you weren't fucked up on hoppers before you got there, were you?
That was kind of the part of it. No.
But like, did you do it there at the ritual or did you like sit home?
No. And part of the ritual was drinking the mushroom tea.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's part of the ritual. You get there and you do it. You're not pre-drinking. You're not.
No. And if I was putting on a public ritual, someone showed up intoxicated, they wouldn't be coming in my circle.
Right.
But if your group agrees, you know, if somebody's like, okay, I'm going to smoke some pot. And I'm going to do this meditation and I'm going to see what I can see. That's great.
Yeah.
And you also have to remember, too, we are recording this in Canada.
Yes.
Where marijuana is legal.
Legal is to the point that the government sells it to us.
That's right.
They've got to do something because people don't smoke like they used to. So they need their revenue.
it just replaced cigarettes.
Yeah. So, yes, marijuana is absolutely legal in Canada.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we're really sorry if it's not legal where you are.
I'm not a marijuana person myself, but, you know, I do
enjoy. Do any of us smoke? I don't smoke.
Well, I remember when it first became legal. And I waited till like the lineups down the road and around the blocks, because were hilarious. That was a thing, yes.
People lining up for a mile to get the pot store.
I remember going in the first time I went in, and I had no idea what I was looking for. I just said to the young fellow, "I am looking for something that will help me sleep and help control pain." I said, "But I can't smoke it because I have severe asthma." And he was like, "Oh man, that sucks."
That's a different level of customer service.
I know.
But you know.
So I do.
Gummy.
I do an oil.
A good CBD oil.
But it's balanced with the THC. And I only take it at night.
Yes.
And although there have been times I have taken it in the daytime for pain, and the pain, it's the THC and everything has gone so much to pain control that there was no high from it.
Yeah.
At home in the evenings, I can take it like before bed and can get a little whoopy doozy high. But again, that is where some of my best ritual ideas come from too.
Your mind is free.
That's where some of the really good, I guess maybe my brain is more relaxed and allowing to connect some dots that I would fight against.
Yeah.
Or you're not managing, you're not having to deal with pain.
There's that as well, too.
Yeah, allows your brain
to function a little bit better.
When I said I'm not into marijuana, I meant smoking. I was never a marijuana, like I never a pot smoker.
It's not necessarily for everyone. No. I hate cigarettes, but man, I love smoking a cigar. And those are two different things.
Two totally different
things. But they're both tobacco.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. You know, I'll eat a half a gummy or half a piece of chocolate. And I do have some CBD oil for when my back is really hurting and it's like, I cannot take any more ibuprofen here or something when it's going bad. Mm. And I have some very high THC CBD oil. But I think with your ritual, if you can do it in a safe place, if you feel safe, if you're someone who has not done any kind of marijuana or anything in the past, start slow, I would say. Because you don't want to completely freak out because a lot of it just could be hallucinations and not spiritually fulfilling, just a freak out, man.
You want to give yourself a good context. So if you're trying some kind of psychedelic or entheogen, you want to make it a supportive, if you're not comfortable, have somebody there that sits watch, but also the quality of the experience can be affected by the quality of the environment that you're in. You're not hiding in the basement or something. You want to be in a comfortable spot that is supportive of your spiritual practice.
Yeah.
And that may be outside.
Yeah. Mm. Even in the one psychedelic circle I was in, there was, if this is too much for you, leave, or this person here is not partaking. Because if you're in a 3-hour drumming psychedelic circle with no talking, you're pretty whacked by the end of it, even if you're not on a psychedelic.
Mm-hmm.
So there was always, like, say, safe people there. And it was well put on for that week, for what it was. It wasn't just, a bunch of crazy hippies. It was a bunch of crazy hippies. Okay. But it was, this is where you'll be safe and this is this. And don't take more than this. It was well controlled.
Yeah.
So what was it?
The psychedelic?
Yeah.
Mushrooms.
But, like, was it a particular mushroom?
Your garden variety, go pick it in someone's pasture, magic mushroom tea.
Oh, okay.
Because
that's how little I know.
Listen, they grow everywhere. I don't, we're out in Nova Scotia here. You go to the country, anywhere where there's farms, they're just, you can pick them by the bucketful. They're illegal now, but when I was a teenager, they weren't even illegal because they weren't an issue. They got very popular. Like, people got them in their yards.
Wait, hold up. Did you just say they were elite?
Weren't legal. They weren't.
Okay, because
they were not illegal.
They were not illegal. Pardon me.
Because they were not. They were not.
Yeah, because they're legal now.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. You can buy them at the store.
Yeah, you can. But why buy them when you can pick them in someone's
yard? I think you buy them for potentially not pick them.
Well, they were illegal for quite a while. Yes. Because they sort of came into view. It's like, it was like the early 80s. And it's like, what is this? But I mean, it was hard to stop anybody.
I have a friend who's very big on microdosing.
Yes, microdosing for anxiety.
She says it's life-changing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard that from people as well. And if things don't improve soon, that might be another avenue that I will need to explore.
Well, I have someone you can talk to that does a lot.
I've heard of a lot of people with anxiety and whatnot.
I've experienced a lot of anxiety since COVID.
We all.
Now, I tried CBD, and CBD was great for the brain, but not for the body.
Mm.
As in the sense of the anxiety still existed in my body and caused anxiety issues. My mind was great, but it didn't do anything for the other part.
That's kind of, what I've said, just to say about the THC CBD oil. And I've even said this to my doctor, like being straight out with what I take and when and why, the CBD and THC to try and fall asleep at night. And I said, and the upside is if I don't fall asleep, I'm high enough that I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
That I'm lying there awake at 4 o'clock in the morning.
The little bit of CBD at night is when I would take it. Yeah. And I just fall right asleep.
Now, just as a reminder, we are not professionals in any way.
Good
Lord. Yeah. We never.
Do not take any of this as advice.
None of this is medical advice.
No, this is personal experience.
Yeah.
So at the same time, there are rituals, of course, which are based around, like you had mentioned, the mushroom. Like the sambal. The sambal is a drinking ritual.
Yes.
So you are going to get drunk. No one is expecting you to spit out between drinks, and that's okay. But you still have to take it within moderation.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're pass out drunk by the end of the sambal.
Or before the end of the stumble.
Yeah, before the end of the stumble, and you're stumbling. It's not.
You don't chug every time that goes on. You take a little sip.
Yes, exactly. You still need to be able to perform the next round.
Yeah, but it's what you're comfortable with, or what your group, any group you're working with. My thought has always been, if one person objects, then it doesn't happen. If
exactly. Say,
you know, mm-hmm. if you've got five people and four of them are going, oh, yeah, a glass of wine is fine. And someone said, no, I don't think we should. Then you're not doing it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the same thing, changing the subject a little bit with skyclad, you know, in nude in your rituals. If you went to some place and they said, oh, we do these things skyclad, and you didn't want to, they said, oh, you can just keep your clothes on. But anytime I've been around that at all, it's been everybody agrees or no one does it.
Mm.
And I'm a believer in that too. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you can keep your clothes on. We're going to be naked. Well, maybe that's not what you signed up for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think, I can't even remember now which author it was who, after years of proclaiming skyclad as being the only way, finally came around and said, you know what? If you can't boost your energy through a thin layer of broadcloth cotton.
Yeah.
Then you're just not doing it.
You
right.
What
is the
Look,
point?
If you have the power to do skyclad here in February, you are the most powerful magician I know.
Well, the thing is that's what I often say to any you know students I've had. It's like people, skyclad rituals, skyclad rituals. When it's actually warm enough, you'll have deep poisoning.
It's frostbite or fly bite.
And I'm sorry. And I mean, there's certain places you cannot put bug spray. And then your privates are getting bit. It's like, you know, you just don't want to do that. Like, no, you know.
It's not a comfy experience.
Yeah, no. Now, no one loves going nude more than me, or skinny dipping in waterfalls or lakes more than me. But, you know, at night or evenings, it's like the bugs are just out. It's terrible.
Getting back to the drugs and alcohol.
The topic of the episode.
Yes, we've had a situation, well, and you were saying before as well, too,
yeah,
where it has destroyed an entire coven.
So if you're starting a group and you have things like, we want you to come to Circle without drugs or alcohol in your system, write that in your group's manifesto, your rules, whatever.
Yeah.
Right from the beginning. Do not assume that everybody is looking at this the same way, because I was in a working group that was several years old, and it basically fell apart because there was this huge division over coming to ritual, if not high, pretty darn close. Mm. And other people saying, well, what's the problem? And some people being adamantly against it. It was really hard. And you had similar, right?
And it's very sad and very painful when you've been working with people for many years.
Yeah.
And seeing their difficulties in life have led them to these unhealthy practices,
mm-hmm.
and wanting to support them and help them. But at the same time, you can only do that for so long before you feel like you have to take some of that responsibility. Mm. And if you're not willing to take that responsibility on, you have to cut ties.
Yes.
It's very difficult.
And it's very difficult. I mean, much more for you.
It was terrible.
As well.
Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah. It was terrible.
It's heartbreaking. It is
really heartbreaking. And it's been over 20 years.
Yeah.
And I still miss those people.
Yeah.
After 20 years, I still miss them.
Well,
but I know we made the right decision was made at the time.
Yeah. So is it the same group?
No, two different groups.
Tell us about yours.
I prefer not to.
Well, you don't have to get into details.
We had some people who just couldn't seem to function without drugs and or alcohol.
Yeah.
And one of them fell further and further into alcoholism.
Right.
And even on the nights, one of them in particular, when they would go, okay, I'm not going to have any drinks or have any of this or have anything before ritual, by the end of it, they were having their withdrawal, and then they spent the rest of the night in bed. And it was very upsetting because we were all very close. And yeah, it's a scene, kind of.
So this that sounds like a bigger picture problem then. Not necessarily.
Definitely. Oh, yeah.
It wasn't connected to the ritual or the practice.
No.
It was that individual was suffering alcohol.
It became part of it because we had rules against being, you know, intoxicated in ritual.
Right.
But they started that they couldn't show up.
Well, and that's something we've learned in the last few years, that the solution to alcoholism is not going dry. That's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah.
Your body requires, do not quote me on this, I am not a professional, an ounce an hour up to. Because we had a situation in our home, not for any of my family members, but a situation within our friend circle where we helped the friend get through those withdrawal symptoms so they could go to a rehab clinic. It was expensive. It was not cheap. Like, we had to infuse this individual with an ounce of alcohol every hour, and to keep this person in a situation where they
were having bad DTs
or at risk of seizures.
Yeah, that's the thing that I learned a lot through that experience about that. But getting back to one thing Gwen was saying about, you know, in your manifesto, the tiniest detail that you think should be no big deal may become a deal. So if you're starting a group, be very clear on your rules and your rules.
It's
and regulations
the Robert Frost, good fences make good neighbors or something. That's good it. Rules give you a framework where you can be free.
Yes.
And it's also something I learned in sort of, you know, business education, a living document.
Yes.
Yes.
It's not written in stone. It changes, and be willing to change with it.
Yes.
Things you may have thought were important may no longer be as important. Things may develop that you realize we need to incorporate this into our rule book.
And also when doing that, and consensus is very different than a vote where majority rules.
Yes.
Because you really should in your group have consensus. And if that means talking about it for 2 hours, then you've got to talk about it for 2 hours, because consensus is when everyone agrees. Because if somebody doesn't agree, well, then you're into a whole nother kettle of fish.
Right. Yeah. So basically what this is boiling down to is drugs and alcohol aren't necessarily good or bad, but it all boils down to communication. And
context.
Context and agreement amongst the individuals who are involved. Because so in our rituals, we have a lot of children, and we also have a lot of people who just don't consume alcohol. There's nothing wrong with that. So when we pass around our blessing cup of mead, it often travels with a little cup of apple juice, and that's perfectly fine as well.
Yeah.
And there's in our ritual and our thought and belief, no difference between those two.
Yeah. And oftentimes in your, you know, your sort of standard witchcraft 101, there's often a chalice with wine in it that often goes around, and that's okay if everyone agrees, or if people say, no, we're not having alcohol, we can have something else, or everyone
grape juice.
Little, or everyone can get little cups, because the alcohol kills all the germs. If you're having grape juice, everyone gets a little Dixie cup or a shot glass.
But the point is that the alcohol isn't required. It stays mostly for tradition. And the idea that in our ritual, we're attempting to sacrifice something that was created by us. We create mead, so we consume the mead that we've created. None of us are making apple juice. I guess we could make apple juice.
We probably have enough.
It's not a necessity, but
just be careful. And especially if you're going to try it on your own, be extremely careful.
Oh, of course. And that's a different thing.
That's a whole
obviously, whatever thing. You do, whatever you choose.
Be safe.
Be safe. In moderation.
Yeah.
And do it with friends.
And I've been to many, many, many a ritual without a speck of alcohol.
Oh, yes. It's not required.
It's actually usually the norm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
More than not. Well, thank you very much for tuning in for this interesting episode of Are Mushrooms Legal or Not? And I know it makes us all sound like we're all I wanted to put in, that most rituals, there's no many more rituals without substances than whist, makes us all sound like a bunch of stoners or something. Anyhow, thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in. And if you have any comments or suggestions, you can get a hold of us on our Facebook page. And thank you to Krista and our Patreon. We're very, very grateful.
Three Witches and a Druid podcast would like to take a moment to shout out to our amazing Patreon supporters from all around the world. Without your generous contributions, we could not bring you this magical content, and we thank you once again for listening.
And until next time, everyone, merry meet.
Merry part.
And merry meet again.
Blessed be.
This has been Three Witches and a Druid podcast. Thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.